Hi, this is Dave. Welcome. Who's here?
Kat.
Welcome, Kat. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Dave? Happy New Year. Good.
Same to you. How are you guys hearing me? Is there a distortion in the sound?
There is a little bit on my end.
Okay. I have a new telephone and an amplifier, and they forgot to send me the filter. So I think that's the problem. I'm getting it corrected, but I can't today. So I hope this is not too distracting.
Okay.
Okay. Great. And what's going on with you?
Well, it's the new year, and I'm real excited. And I know that we're going to be coming to an end here with our studies with you, Dave. And I decided to continue on with my financial studies. And I ordered a course from one of the well-known people in the financial industry.
Uh-huh.
And I found that with the course, there's also a study group that meets locally. So I'll be doing that on Wednesday nights beginning on the 22nd of January so I can continue on with this. I would really like to eventually be able to facilitate this type of learning to a group of people.
Terrific. Now, what is the objective of the financial studies that you're doing?
It is basically, you know, the money story that we're doing here. It's to simply teach people how to be better money managers.
I see.
And okay. with that part of it, and then with your part of it, the new money story, to really help people get really in touch with not just what they're doing with their money, but why they're doing it. I think those two combined will be a nice combination.
I think that's terrific. That'll be very interesting to synthesize those two. Interesting
mm-hmm.
stuff. And you're going to do that live, you said.
I'm going to go to a meeting. There's several groups, actually, that meet here in the local area. I believe that they have them in the morning and then the evening and the afternoons, and I'm choosing the 6 p.m. because that's usually when I'm awake.
What's the name of the group?
This is going to be under Dave Ramsey.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great.
Dave Ramsey, right, and, yeah, his I was interested in going to his class down in Nashville. It's quite costly, but that's just to, you know, take it to a different level.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has quite a following and does a great deal of benefit for people. That's terrific. That's interesting. I'll be interested to see what you think about synthesizing the two and creating your own story of that and your own
mm-hmm.
Coaching firm around that.
And Dave, I'm real interested in what you have in the future as well, because the whole financial piece of our lives has always been of interest to me.
Okay. Let me tell you one thing, and I had intended to, I have a MentorPath Mastermind group that starts in March, and I'll just mention this because I have each of the four of you on the list of people to personally invite. I only invite, first of all, people who have done training with me, either New Money Story Mentor Training or New Life Story Wellness, and then I selectively invite people because it's a limited seating of 10, and we meet
mm-hmm.
once a month, 2.5 hours, and the last 45 minutes is an expert content contributor. It's like some best-selling author, and I send around a copy of the book, or someone who's nationally known in marketing or business or in some aspect of coaching. And it's really a mastermind group to really develop personal and professional experience. And I have done one group. I have the first group that I've done like this that's coming to an end. We've had some stellar speakers and just a fantastic experience. And I'm going to have all new speakers, so it's going to be a whole new group. It lasts for 1 year. It's Fridays at 1 Eastern. So that's what I have in the immediate future. If that and I'll send you something about that if that interests you. If you've ever been a participant in a mastermind, it's really a powerful brainstorming group for
mm-hmm.
business development. So it's more about business development and massive success personally and professionally than it is. It's not about content, although we do the expert content contributors, and we have a focus on certain aspects that interest people or that a member might want to present or ask me to do. So that's what I have on the immediate horizon. So, yeah.
I'm very, very interested, and I have been part of a mastermind group that we created something for a 2-year period.
Uh-huh.
And I can send you that information. I'm sure that that you might have heard of at least the individual who was behind all of this. But that was interesting.
Karen Greenstreet.
Begging your pardon?
Karen Greenstreet.
Actually, the person was Marsha Weider.
Oh, okay. I've heard of her. I don't know much about her. Don't know her personally. But, yeah. That's okay, super. We don't have a roadmap presentation today. We have a buy. Diane's going to present next week. So that's why I'm really...
Dave?
Yes.
We had me down.
Wait, I'm sorry. Who is this?
Kat. I had volunteered January 8th.
Okay, I had you down. Oh, that's right. You had volunteered to do another one after your on December 11th.
Right.
Okay, I am not looking at the page where I wrote that, so I apologize for that, and I remember now, and I'm looking at the wrong page. Thank you. I did that when I was in New Orleans, and I can't find that page anymore. Thank you for reminding me.
That's
terrific.
If you'd like to do it today, that's fine. If you'd like to push me off for another day, that's fine. But I'm ready.
I don't want to push you off. I want to do it today, and I want to reshuffle my thinking because I need to get with it here. I'm glad you said that, and look forward to it. And I hope you've each received the email about thinking about putting these roadmap and maybe expanding a little bit or doing an epilogue and putting it into a book form for each of you to sell at your site and to have as your information and contact information that can enhance your practices. Any questions about that or any thoughts about that?
Hey, Dave, it's Chris. I've been on the exit of the call for about 6 minutes listening. I didn't want to interrupt. But, I think your ideas you laid out in the email is very exciting. Looking forward to getting your guidelines and participating.
Okay, super. Yeah, I'm working on those. Thanks. Yeah, and thanks for the email with a thumbs up right away. I appreciate that. What's going on with you, Chris?
Just really kind of trying to get my head screwed back on after the holidays. It was a little bit wild.
I understand. Yeah.
So, anyway, just getting back in the game.
Right.
Nice, fun, family-filled, uneventful, Christmas holiday, and it was great.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. All right, super.
Back to reality.
Yeah. Lynn or Diane?
Yep, it's Lynn here. I'm in the same boat. I was looking at
I did
my roadmap.
Because I was talking. This is who?
It's Lynn. Hi.
Lynn, hi.
Happy New Year.
Thanks. Same to you.
Yeah, I was actually going over my roadmap when I had my opportunity to share, and I'm going to send that off to you because I guess you need the hard copy as well, right? I never took the liberty of sending you the hard copy.
Well, that's great. Why don't you keep it because I may expand a little. I want to get a certain format and
okay,
and especially be thinking about if you have an epilogue. For example.
Okay.
Something that you have thoughts about that may have, something that may have changed or you reflected on it since or had some insight, what the impact of doing it was for you or for your client, if it was for the client. But I'm working on that and sending it around. I've edited some books, but this is a little different because it's something that is really experiences, and I want to really preserve anonymity and confidentiality and create a format that is easy for you that will not be a lot of additional work, so that most of the work is of me for compilating and you know, organizing it in sections and that sort of thing. So I'll be getting that to you in the not-too-distant future. I appreciate your feedback and enthusiasm for that. I think it can be a really interesting contribution and something that you can sell from your site that and with other people doing that can promote your businesses. So be working on a brief bio, too, but I'll send guidelines for that as well.
So, awesome. Sounds great.
Yeah. Anything else, Lynn?
No, nothing here. Dealing with personal issues, you know, being a mom and having a son in school and stuff like that. But other than that, I'm off for the rest of the week, so I'm going to be focusing back on things that I committed to over the holidays, and due to illness and everything else, I wasn't able to. So tomorrow I'll refocus myself and commit to getting some things completed.
Super. What's the weather like there in Quebec now?
Oh, it's freezing. Oh, I just can't stand going outside. Oh, it's terrible.
Is it like a hovering around zero?
For you, absolutely. Like as far as Fahrenheit, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
There or below with the windshield.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, wow. Well, stay warm and stay safe. Thanks for the update. Diane,
yeah.
What about you? Is Diane with us? Well, anything before Kat does her presentation, anything that's come up either in the reading or in your work with clients that have been challenges or things to discuss that you'd like us to talk about briefly? Okay. One little preview of a coming attraction. I want to invite each of you, even though you're in current training, to attend the intergroup that will be the first Monday of February at 1 Eastern. I'm going to send around an information about it and an invitation, and it will be ongoing once a quarter. And the white paper this time is going to be a little bit different. Usually it's there's a series of white papers that I'm doing. This one's a little bit different because I really came to recognize that although attachment behavior, attachment patterns is a huge area, and particularly in psychoanalysis, developmental psychology, there's a lot of information that can be very useful for coaches that is nowhere in the coaching literature. So this is going to be a first bridge to that and an attempt to create something that will be useful to you. So I want to spend some time discussing that, and then the rest of the time we'll be looking at best practices and success stories and that sort of thing. So within about a week or so, you'll be getting that invitation. But save the date, the first Monday in February, February 7th, at noon. It's for 1 hour. So that's a coming deal. Any thoughts or questions or anything before Kat presents her roadmap, please?
I have, this is Kat, and I have one thought and one request. And this is about the time that you do these. 1 p.m. Eastern time is 11 a.m. my time. And, yeah, that's honestly, I'm just going to say it's too early.
Ah, okay.
That's all. I'm just wondering if you could maybe, I don't know if it's possible to even revisit the idea of the time on this, but for me personally, and I'm not asking you to do it for, you know, for me personally, but just look at the overall picture and how many more people might come if they were able to do it at the end of their work day.
Okay.
Instead of, you know,
I appreciate that. I'm going to reopen that. I did a poll some time ago, and it was kind of the favorite to have it around close to noon where somebody could take a lunch break for an hour.
Lunch break.
And do it during that time, but I'll definitely revisit that. Usually Monday evenings are the times that I'm doing a CTA teleseminar series. And Tuesday's the time I'm doing one under my own umbrella, but I want to open that up again. I appreciate you mentioning it. It also is why we record it, but that's not the same as being there.
Right.
They are recorded for playback or MP3 download, and my IT guy posts them within, you know, the next day. But that's not the same because there's a real dynamic energy with the people there, and it's really been fun. So I hope you can join, but I hear you, and I'll revisit that definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, hello, David, Diane. I'm sorry. I had a problem with my phone. And,
oh, okay. Let me come back to you because, Kat, was that the thought or the request? But we've got one more to go.
That was the entire thing that I was going to say.
Oh, that's the thought and the request.
The thought and the request, right.
Okay.
Do it in
there. Deal. Okay. Diane, let's just check in with you. What's going on?
Oh, good. No, I just want to say hello, and I'm sorry. I don't know what happened with my phone, but I had to go find another one. Good. I actually, sorry, I'm a little late entering this. The time worked for me. Actually, this time right now has been really challenging for me only because I still am transitioning and I have dinner and family that I need to get to different places, but I've managed to make it work most of the time. So, you know, I prefer during the day actually is better for me, but I've made this. You know, just on a good note, I had someone I've really been working with for years to make change and get herself out of a lousy financial place just really called me today and told me that, you know, the plan that we've worked on really for a couple of years now took place, and it's terrific, and she's in Austin, Texas, and has an apartment, has a new job, her fiance has a new job, and they're so proud of themselves. So it was actually a really good day to hear, wow, look where I've come from, and look where I am now. So that was actually really inspiring.
That's a great success story. That's super.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I chose this time as a time that is smack dab in the middle of dinner time in New Canaan, Connecticut. So I know it's not convenient for everybody.
Well, it's dinner time. I can always change this. Actually, one of my kids, she dances, and you know what? It's just, and I managed to make it work, but you know what? The dance is the priority above the dinner time for this one, but it's, you know, it's okay. It's all good, so we're fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Super. So, Kat, are you ready to do your case?
I am.
Okay, excellent.
Okay. This particular individual that I'm doing the roadmap on today was my husband. And I had three to choose from. He was actually bottom on the list. I don't know how he made the top, but he did. So,
and of course, you have his permission to do his roadmap presentation, right?
100%. I rewrote it, and we just went over the entire thing here a couple of times a few minutes ago. And everything that's in here is 100% on board, even his age. He's on board with everything.
Okay.
And this is his story. This is his story. I did the same series of powerful questions with him, and he just answered them like I've done with other people as well. So I'll go ahead and start, and this is his story, and it starts like this. My name is Chuck, and I'm in my mid-60s. I'm connected to the story of my money and own that I am the author of this story. In looking back over my life, I see where I made mistakes, and also at which point I stopped making them. I feel I now have financial security, knowing that my wife carefully saves for our future. I added that. Prior to meeting her in 2002, I had given no thought to my retirement. Now I know I can comfortably retire at any age. My parents were extremely careful with money. They paid cash for everything, never using credit cards. The only time anything was paid for over time was when large farm equipment was purchased. Of course, large farm equipment resulted in more profit at the end of the season. We were a family of six. There were four children. We all worked hard to support our parents on the farm. For an allowance at that time, and this was back in the 50s and 60s, I received $1 per week until I was about 14 years old. I would save those dollars until I had enough money to buy an item I really wanted. My first large purchase was a $75 telescope. My next one was a rifle for about $20. When I was just shy of my 14th birthday, my father bought a 125 Yamaha motorcycle for me. I crashed it within 6 months and lost the enjoyment that came with initially having received it. This had been purchased for me as a reward for my work in the fields with my father. At the age of 16, my parents again rewarded me for my hard work in the field, this time giving me a brand new 1965 Mustang. This was my very first car. I enjoyed that car and the friends that were attracted to me because of it. Keep in mind that this was during the 60s when we were inundated with ads on television, in magazines and newspapers for the newest and greatest thing that we simply couldn't live without. I found myself wanting most of that glamorous and sexy lifestyle. The minute I was on my own, living away from my parents, I started to buy sports cars, simply for the prestige. To me, owning a new sports car enhanced my life by having people look at me like I had something they would never have. I felt like I was the one others tried to keep up with. I now realize I was the one trying to keep up with them. Those cars gave me the self-esteem I never had before. Even washing it in the front yard for the neighbors to see made me feel important and accomplished. People came to hang out with me and go for rides, and we went up into the mountains and just spent time together, and that made me feel like I was friend rich. Over the years, there were many vehicles, but the sports cars that I had included 3 Corvettes, 2 Mustangs, 1 Firebird, and 1 GTO. Looking back, I realized I could have saved all of that money rather than wasting tremendous amounts of it on cars. But back then, saving money was not nearly as thrilling as buying another car. I see now that I lost the respect of many in my inner circle by my carefree ways when they were struggling to make ends meet. I can also say I believe I now gain the respect of others based on how I live my life and how I manage my finances. If I were to make a list of what to keep and what to shed in my life's money story, I would first shed these beliefs. That money can buy friends, love, happiness, respect, health, prestige, and a positive attitude. But I would keep these beliefs. That money can buy my own home, a healthy savings account. Money can buy for me peace of mind, financial security, and better ways to make more money. If I were to give a learning to someone from all of this, I would have to say to start saving your money at a very early age. My goals in the future are to change the way I do business so the farm will generate a lot more income. And then this is for me as a side note. At this point, we went over in detail the changes that Chuck was going to make to enhance the business, and I had him write all of those changes out on the list in detail. And then back to Chuck. By changing how I do business, I will feel in complete control of my company, and by having complete control, I will have much less stress. I will feel independent and know for the first time in my life, I can accomplish something from beginning to end without depending on others. I am confident I will now have control of my business finances year after year for the rest of my life by making this change. This will make me feel like a very successful businessman for the first time, rather than a struggling farmer. I will then enjoy making money more by doing the work myself and not having to share the profits. I can already see how I will also be able to appreciate fully the money that I make. And that was Chuck's story. And there was something that was triggered within me, and I asked him this question. I asked, what was so important about being viewed as the one who had everything versus being viewed as yourself? And his response was, there was something very special about being the one who had more and nothing special at all about being myself. Thank you.
Wow, that's very, very impressive. Now, how did you go about doing that with him? Did he read the material or did you work it through with him? What was the process in which you engaged?
The process that I use for everyone is the same. I read the material, and I read the roadmap, and then I also used the story that's in the back of the new money story manual, the in the addendum, someone else's story. And through those pieces in the book, I then come up with a series of what I call very powerful questions, and I just ask the questions. And then my clients or my friends and my husband answer the questions, and then I rewrite it into a story.
Wow. Now, do you devise the questions from where? I mean, do you have a set of questions you ask the same to everyone, or do you individualize it?
Both.
Wow.
And I find it interesting, Dave, that you're asking this, because I have to ask, am I missing something?
No, I'm wondering what I'm missing, because you're getting some incredible material, and I'm just wondering how you go about the process of doing it. And I'd be interested, would you mind sending those the basic template of questions around to all of us for us to look at? It sounds like they worked very well for you, and I'm always interested in revising and updating the material that I have and that I share with people based on experiences just like this, and this sounds very intriguing.
Thanks, Dave. I think I incorporate what I learned through the coaching, and I believe that the best way to get people to open up is through a series of powerful questions.
Uh-huh.
And I just added that to the Money Story
okay.
series.
If it's
yeah.
not any extra work for you, I'd be very interested in seeing them and having the group see them.
Kat, I can assure
you. I would enjoy doing it, and it'll be definitely a great learning experience for me to be able to put this together. Thanks.
Super. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say it would be greatly beneficial to me, someone that's new to coaching.
Super.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, I think it'd be very interesting. So thanks for doing that. Other comments or questions of Kat about her presentation?
Excellent.
Thanks.
I thought it was really great also, Kat, that you incorporated some of the emotion that motivated him to make the change,
mm-hmm.
you know, hindsight, because if, in fact, people can identify with that, and, you know, it's important to have different things at different points in life, but upon reflection, to formulate it as a way going forward, I think was really powerful.
Thanks. I actually appreciate you picking that a lot, because that's one of the things that's important to me is when I'm doing this work with people, is that they get to the root of the cause or over the years, why they do what they do and why they did it.
Yeah,
it's impressive the way you develop such a powerful crucible for your husband to be so open and so honest and so reflective in the process and so honest with himself about what he was doing. Very, very insightful and introspective, a process that you've engaged with him and a remarkable amount of material to and depth of material to see that process. So congratulations. That's really outstanding.
Thanks. You guys give me a big head.
I really like this, too.
There's an old story from back when I used to watch the Saturday game of the week in the 50s and 60s when Dizzy Dean was announcing the game of the week. And he's an old 30s and 40s Hall of Fame pitcher. And he would brag about all the stuff that he had done and talk about what it was like back then and pitching in the World Series. And Pee Wee Reese, also a Hall of Famer, was in the broadcast booth. And Pee Wee would chide him and say, "Diz, you're just bragging again." And Diz would say, "Pee Wee, if you done it, it ain't bragging." So if you done it, it ain't bragging. So that's great. Any other questions or responses to Kat?
No, I thought it was great. It's Lynn here, and I enjoyed the fact that you included the beliefs from back when he was younger and more free, with his money than when he realized the actual money worth at a older or a later time in life.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great.
Thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Anything else? Okay, well, again, for those of you who didn't get in quite at the very beginning, I apologize that my system is a little bit with background noise or enhanced noise. I have a new system, but they forgot to send the filter to my amplifier, so you're probably hearing some resonance or some background noise. It's not as clear as usual. It will be corrected, but it's not yet. So remember, we moved the wellness material to week 8 and everything else back a week. So today we're looking at career and money, and this is not in our usual sequence, but we just moved everything back a week. So to talk about career and money, first some thoughts about passion and flow, and then I want to present a kind of a roadmap of a new career story, and then to discuss your practice and marketing, your career and your money story in regard to practice and marketing, some things that I want to highlight and have a bit of a discussion about, because simply we don't have another place to talk about it, and I think it might be helpful here. So first, about passion. Every success story is a love story. Bob Costas on Tim Russert's death captured his passion and his infectious enthusiasm. Costas said, he told me once, "Bob, when I'm not with family, I don't want to be any place but here." All truly successful people live in alignment with their passion. They're fulfilling their purpose in life, living their dreams. Rick Miller's research on the key to happiness and peace of mind in his book Massive Success studied the secret of the world's wealthiest people to become successful. They may not know themselves. They may be caught up in what they do each day and be unaware of the elements of exactly how they've become successful, but they have discovered their why. They have aligned their purpose with their passions. Famous theologian William Barclay said, there are two great days in a person's life, the day we were born and the day we discover why. Consider the inverse. The number one reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. To talk about flow for a minute, because I think this is a component, and I think it sort of fits here. Flow is a state of mind of heightened focus, productivity, and happiness. The ability to create flow, to be more productive and satisfied at work, offers some significant advantages. Flow is one of the positive states that's been studied in the last couple of decades that contributes so much to effectiveness and performance. And flow, from another perspective, is state of mind, of being centered and focused without distraction. This state of mind is when you allow full immersion and engage full immersion in the process of concentration and performance that creates superior results. In the state of mind of flow, people engage so fully in what they do that they lose track of time. The experience becomes its own reward, a way of countering distraction and becoming immersed in purpose. And this may be some of what we do at times in coaching individuals, is to help them create a structure and a format in which they can experience that flow. And that may be external, such as creating a structure where there are no interruptions, creating a schedule of their day and of their week, as well as aligning their own purpose with goals and strategies so that all of them can go in the same direction. So I want to give you a kind of an overview of roadmapping a new career story. And this is from the perspective of working with clients. And this is a roadmap that could apply to a new job, a new career, or considering one, wanting a raise, or beginning or expanding a business. So these are some of the issues in terms of career story, especially as it impacts money story. First, recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line? Clearly describe your career story as it exists now. Then describe what you want in a career story. If someone wants to make a career change, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone has only performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that their job or career is not rewarding, then decide to move on, they don't have the information needed, in my view. They can't make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. In other words, to do an apples-to-apples comparison, they would have to function at 100% of their capacity in their current career to contrast it with the anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career, because you know there's going to be an idealization of a new career of what someone's looking forward to. It's likely, in fact, that the same process that resulted in a ceiling, say, at 80% currently, would be repeated in the new situation. So one question here. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? And I'm always amazed, anytime I ask someone that question, when the topic of career or career change or considering retirement or anything like that comes up, they always know exactly what percent of their functioning they're at now. They don't have to think about it. It's like 75% or 60%, 80%. It's always an immediate response that they don't have to think about. So another question then, if not at 100%, explore why. This is your immediate coachable moment. Have you ever performed at 100% of your capacity? Do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current or past position so that you can make an informed decision? Now, here's a brief story that illustrates an aspect of this. At the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time, I served as a consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research, which is the place here in Houston that Representative Gabby came to after she was shot for her rehabilitation. And it's associated with Baylor College of Medicine, where I was on the faculty, working with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, often as the result of an accident. Now, not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime of disability. Instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. Suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially when fundamental body control was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment in time, just after the injury and the disability was fresh, the idea of suicide, of being able to control one thing in their lives, to know that they could end the pain and end the helplessness, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. I recommended that we work together to achieve their full capacity now, recognizing that it was a different level since the onset of disability. Only by achieving their full potential at their new level could they make an informed decision about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. And they got that immediately. I told them that I would entirely understand if, after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that decision. I worked with several hundred people over a period of 5 years. Thankfully, no one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new, though different, level of functioning. And we were striving together for 100% at that new level. Next step, own your needs and ideals regarding career. be clear about needs and ideals, if and how they align with passion and experience. When your passion and expertise combine, wonderful possibilities emerge. So a question here, what do you want in your career? And listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going towards something, or rarely both. And distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. Be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or even burnout with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, you may need to realign or recommit to a career. And keep in mind that choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if you chose the wrong career then or did it for the wrong reason. One client spoke of a particular storyline that she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself, to money, or the things that money bought, but she was addicted to the pursuit of perfection, to her work ethic. More became a goal. And the residual, the side effects of that, more money, more work, was to be more perfect. She wanted to develop the ideal physician practice for all of her physicians and for all of her patients. The story of the pursuit of money itself was part of that, and it became a substitute for other stories. And the ideal of more, like perfect, is not a goal. It can never be reached because it lacks an endpoint. So her self-esteem was never validated. It was like she was always on the treadmill, but never really achieved what she wanted, never got satisfaction. She'd become exhausted with the perpetual series of occasions for hope of being perfect, yet never quite getting there. Now, I'll return to her situation in a moment as we go through a bit more of the roadmap. Next step, assess what is present and what is missing in a current career. What information do you need? Research new information regarding things like personal skills, abilities, aptitudes. A couple of questions here. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? And what is it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? And here, distinguish internal dissatisfaction from job dissatisfaction. Internal struggles and unhappiness are often blamed on a job or even like a marriage at times. People want to change the obvious external cause rather than to look internally. Sometimes people even create job-related struggles in order to externalize unhappiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or simply to pose a recognizable remedy. Then the supposed way to get rid of the problem would be to leave it. Next step, decide a geographic cure, in other words. Next step, decide on a plan and how to make it work. A question here. How would working with me get you to where you want to be? Now, to return to this client, the physician who had about a dozen other physicians working for her in an extensive practice. Her medical practice was booming, yet she wasn't enjoying it or feeling fulfilled, only looking to the next task to do perfectly. I highlighted a pattern that I noticed. It seemed that as soon as she began to really enjoy her work, really get immersed in it, she began procrastinating. She would put off completing work, which restored her old feeling of dread and vague guilt about what she should be doing. When I asked about this pattern and highlighted it, she immediately recognized it. It prompted her insight. She said, "Work has always needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, I began to feel vaguely guilty, like I should be working." And then she traced it to a model that she saw and experienced and was enhanced by her father and her father's interaction with her. So here, one possibility, create a vision. Create a vision of success at your specific goals. Include all the sensory detail, all experiences of successfully arriving at your goal. Review it twice a day. Having a plan supersedes motivation and not feeling like doing something. For example, if your plan is that every Monday from 3 to 5 p.m. you work on your marketing, you may not feel like it, you may not be motivated, but if it's Monday at 3 o'clock, you stick to your plan. Also, I have not, I'm just reminding myself, I have not sent the revision of Outsmart Your Brain and Instruction Manual to you, have I?
I don't think
yes,
so, no.
No?
No.
Okay. In it is one chapter on the old art and the new science of creating a vision, and it's more comprehensive than we've had time to go through because it's really a way of scientifically putting together the elements of creating a vision and the components of affirmations. And affirmations are the story that support a vision. Affirmations revise the software, and the vision rewires your brain. There's more in that, and I've got my chapter, there's 6 or 7, but it's in there. And I'll send that to you because that has been revised, and I promise to send it to you as soon as it was revised. So, next step, map your career plan. SMART goals, initiative, next best action. Now, here's some compelling research that validates the impact of having a specific goal. It's not exactly from a white coat sterile medical laboratory, but it's close. Are you ready? The image of a black housefly was etched into each urinal at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. The theory was that while men may not pay attention to where they aim, if they have a specific target, a goal, they'll focus more specifically. The theory of the originator, Ad Kaboom, proved correct. It reduced spillage by 80%. Choice architecture is an art and a science. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions. We're susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are at times unhealthy, uneconomical, and short-sighted. So when we consider how people think, we can design environments of choice that make it easier for people to pick better options. And some of this is addressed in Outsmart Your Brain as well. Next step. And again, if there are any questions or comments or things you want to add, feel free to jump in. Next step, author changes. Implement the plan to reach your goal. Someone needs the correct paradigm. Changing careers means changing paradigm. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that a present experience could apply to a new career you just changed the setting. Now, and this is an example from a client I worked with in mentor coaching. Even if you go from head of HR to a multinational of a multinational oil company to head of HR at another multinational oil company in the same city, the culture is worlds apart. The correct paradigm would be not only about the process, but about the content of the new career, as well as the process of change. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined or corrected, because in this instance, the culture was totally different, and the assumptions, the paradigms from one culture did not carry forward into the other. And a personal example, in making a transition from medical practice to coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to occasionally present a paper or write a book. My secretary would take calls and put patients on the schedule or on the waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business, and marketing is a world of difference. My mentor coach drugged me kicking and screaming into marketing until I finally found a way to make it fun. So, one question here, who else needs to be involved in your plan? And the last step, program new experiences to then incorporate them into your identity. Considerations of a career need to be considered in conjunction with developmental phases of the individual within that career, as well as where the individual is in life development. Needs and ideals need to be considered in terms of life phase. The developmental issues more in the foreground of beginning midlife are very different than those in the foreground of late midlife even. And that may determine how someone views a career, the challenges, the desire to change careers, and where someone is in the developmental perspective of a particular career can make a difference too. So, an ongoing assessment is essential here. Once a plan is put into action, we need to do four things. Monitor our choices, question our ideas, always keep an open mind to looking if something's working or if it could work better. Probe our reasoning, and finally, ask clearly and honestly in every respect, does it work? So, I want to mention a destination postcard here. A picture or a scene from the not-too-distant future shows specifically what's possible. The application of visualization is a short-term vision, a way station toward an ultimate visualization or destination. In other words, it doesn't have to be one huge long-term visualization, but it can be a kind of destination postcard, small steps along the way. It offers specificity to the belief of arriving and provides hope, a destination. So remember two questions, the travel agent question of how your brain works. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Programming your brain can have short-term and long-term destination. And a destination postcard is an interim goal in the process of getting to your ultimate visualization. So script the critical moves pointed to the destination. Make the changes consistent with identity. Focus on the next step. Build habits to optimize efficiency and visualize the entire experience of successful arrival. Let me give you a very simple example. A couple of you have heard me use this before. If you have a goal of losing 20 pounds and you've decided to do that within a time frame of 4 months and your plan is to do that in a progressive way, and at week 19, you've lost 19 pounds, but your goal has always been to lose 20 pounds. So consider this. For 19 weeks, you've been a failure because you haven't lost 19 pounds. You haven't lost 20 pounds. If your goal is to lose 20 pounds, but your interim goal is to lose 1 pound a week, you've made it into a way to shrink the change, make it measurable, and you've created in that 19 weeks 19 successes. So guess what's going to be sustaining and feel more effective in doing that than having one large-term goal that is all or nothing. So remember that as you hear and work with clients in shrinking change, being very specific, and setting measurable goals. Now, there's a parallel process in mentor coaching. Your client will parallel their life and business experiences and their personality and patterns with you. We've talked about this before in the terms of someone is always showing you exactly what it's like to be him or her. They're going to repeat the attachment pattern, the behavior patterns they have in their life with you. And these are the very ways that you can get leverage to help them in a powerful way, because these are the things they're not aware of. Remember that 90, 95% of our operating systems are not in conscious awareness. The things that they're aware of, that 10% that may be setting goals, specifically looking at things to create strategies to reach the goal, that's the easy part. They know that. It's the other components that come alive in the work with you, that come alive in other aspects of their life that will be most useful to help them look at that once you've developed a working alliance with them to be able to do it. And they'll teach you exactly what it's like to be them, which is why it's necessary to put your ego in a blind trust and not take it personally. Now, some examples here. If a client is stuck in working with you, they're likely stuck in their life or business in the same way. Where they're stuck with you will reveal where they're stuck in their life or business. If they don't fill out their paperwork with you, look to see if they're filling out their paperwork elsewhere. If they don't pay you, look for the parallel process. If someone is creating a sense of frustration for you, look at how they're teaching others as well to respond to them in that particular way, but also use it empathically because that is the client's frustration that you're resonating with and having an accurate read of their experience. So you're getting insight into their experience by your own experience. And this is what I mean by not taking it personally, to use it as information from the client, because this is your instrument that you're calibrating and using in a way to get a read on your client, what that client is experiencing. Now, I want to talk about your business story in a bit, a brief discussion, because we don't talk about it in other places, and I want to mention some things here because this is about your career, your evolving career in coaching, and the transitions that you're making to get here. Every encounter with a client is a short story with a beginning, a narrative, an ending, and a memory that lingers on. Each professional relationship becomes a story arc of development. Your business is a story. Storytelling excellence is not something you just pick up along the way. It's an art, a craft, a discipline to be mastered. A story is the most useful way to think of your business. What's the story of your business? Are the benefits clear? What's the story of your teleseminar, your training course? Is your story animated and engaging, effective, exciting, promising? Whoever has the best story wins. Nobel laureate Daniel Kahneman finds that our memories are very selective. I recently heard him present these findings, and these are intriguing to me especially. No matter how extended an event, whether that's a party, a commercial transaction, a presentation, any encounter, we form our views and make our evaluations, our regard of that, based on dramatically skewing two things. The most intense moment and the final moment, especially the final moment. These final moments are particularly important because after an extended presentation or even just a dinner party, what we may remember will be the few words or the brief exchange at the end, the great way that we felt that retrospectively elevates the value of the entire experience. Kahneman mentioned coming to this as he and his wife had just listened to a really outstanding symphonic performance of 45 minutes. And right before the intermission, as the performance was ending, one of the violins had a screech that lasted really less than a second. But then at intermission, that's all that people were talking about, how that screech of the violin ruined the performance. And he was astonished to think that 45 minutes of pure pleasure was eclipsed by 1 second of an experience that retrospectively reevaluated the entire 45 minutes, and that's the memory they walked away with. So, plan your story all the way through to the end. Make your story memorable, compelling, emotionally engaging. Consider your last impression. Beginnings matter, endings matter. Now, let's talk about your brand and brand as an identity. A brand is the identity, the personality of a product or business, the essence of your business story. A brand is a valuable element of the identity of a business, especially for marketing. Now, a brand is your internal organizer of your concept of your business. It's not going to be something that you're going to see on a business card or see at a website. It's not the logo. It's not the what you put out there. But brand is an emblem of the impressions of a product or company, a metaphor for expectation. Think about the associations you have to brand. What's the first word or phrase that you think of for these brands? Nike, probably something like performance. FedEx, on time, dependable. Oprah, inspiration, information to live a better life. As you go through your day tomorrow, think about the brands that really speak to you, the ones that cause you to buy and maybe later wonder why or later have to tell yourself why. Now, for your coaching business, you are your brand. Your mindset will define your brand. What's your promise? Your promise is your brand. Your brand is an organizer for everything you do, for every connection with potential clients and readers, including website, blog, articles. The most important thing that you can do when you start a blog, for instance, is to think about the brand of that blog. And that's going to include the niche or the subject area, but brand really encompasses the entire aspect of what it is that is going to be about, the impressions and the experiences that people are going to have in reading that blog, as an example. Your brand triggers meaning and connection. It carries its own value. Brand awareness is the link in a consumer's brain between the brand name and logo to certain associations about a product or a service. And people don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. They want to know that you believe in what you do. What's the opposite of a brand? Anyone? Generic. Our clients and potential clients consciously and unconsciously take notes on how we brand and value ourselves, how much we believe in what we do and believe that we can help them, how much, for example, we charge what we're worth, how we handle the business of coaching. How we handle this will determine if we have clients and how successful we and they will be. So just a couple of points about lessons of great branding. Successful brand names are easy to remember, transcend trends, have positive connotations. A brand identity is fundamental to consumer recognition and is a distinction from competitors. A brand identity is what you want to communicate to your potential clients. What is unique about you and what can you give them that is unique in their experience with you? Here's how Howard Schultz, the founder and CEO of Starbucks, put it. A great brand raises the bar. It adds a greater sense of purpose to the experience, whether it's the challenge to do your best in sports and fitness or the affirmation that the cup of coffee you're drinking really matters. Kraft was purchased for 6 times the company's asset value because it was felt that what was really purchased was its brand name. So, what is in common about a winning brand? It's the personification of your service or products, as well as being a bridge to relationship, promise, and loyalty. Your brand must be distinct, and others need to be aware of that distinctness. A brand needs to evoke emotions and create sensory experience to trigger positive association, to exhibit admirable human quality. It needs to stand for something. A brand should create a sense of community with emotional connections individual said that he doesn't sell coffee. He sells a sense of community, a place between home and work. So any thoughts or any questions about that? That's just a quick overview, but there's some things that I wanted to mention because we don't really talk about them in other places. Any thoughts?
I have a question, if you don't mind. If you yourself have any questions that you could pass along to help us determine the answers to that. Do you know, I think that's great information, but again, those questions that really help us to define exactly what we do differently to create a unique brand, that would be terrific.
Okay, I'll tell you the questions that I ask myself when I thought about it in this way. I wanted to know, I wanted to be able to really be able to describe to myself, not that I'm going to put this out on a website or to anyone else, but I wanted to describe to myself what it is that is unique about my coaching, what it is that I believe, why it is that I believe that someone who works with me can have and create, that we can together create a change that will make a difference for the rest of that person's life and their business or in their life, that will truly make a difference, that will create exponential return of value. And how can I describe that to myself that is something that can be conveyed in everything that I do? That it's not going to have to be spoken, because people are not interested in how to make sausage. They're interested in what something is going to do for them. They want, you know, and again, people don't buy what you sell. They buy what you believe. They're not interested in what you're selling. They're interested in what you believe and what you can convey to them. So that came to me as the essence of what I do in coaching. Whatever I do, whether I'm helping a company develop an internal mentoring program, whether I'm working with an individual, and that individual is an executive, if it's somebody making a transition into coaching, if it's a physician who's another professional who's looking at enhancing a practice, it's what I can do to help them understand and bring into focus changes of mind, brain, and behavior to make changes that last. So that means to me understanding how someone's mind and brain works to help them better facilitate how they're going to change and how they can create permanent changes that are really substantial. So the backstory of that and the backstory of my brand then is to look at integrating psychology, psychoanalysis, behavioral economics, neuroeconomics, neuroscience in general, with strategic coaching to make it a unique blend of coaching specifically that can be applied to any one of these situations. So that, in essence, is my brand, because it's my answer to what it is that makes what I do for someone unique and what their experience is that they can take away that is unique to working with me than anyone else in the world. And that's also what informed me about the brand of New Money Story Mentors and New Life Story Training, because it's the same process. What is it that can help the people I train, each of you, to be able in your own way to have something that is unique, that will make you, in my view, the best trained coaches in the world to be able to help someone change and understand the elements of how that change comes across. And that passion and that belief in that is something that I convey, and that is the essence of my brand. Now, does that make sense? And do the questions that I ask kind of bring that alive?
Yes, it does. And a lot of what you've spoken about, you know, is your story. And but I'm just saying, yes, that totally makes sense for you, yet having five different questions would, I think, that are universal may trigger within this group some other opportunities, you know, that are different. So, yes, I think it's terrific of what you went through and the questions you asked, so you, you know, shared your story with us.
Those are generalizable. Those are the same questions you can ask. What is it that makes you unique? What is it you believe about what you do and what someone can experience with you if they work with you that is your unique proposition, better and different than anyone else in the world? And how do you convey that in what you do without saying that necessarily, but how can you convey it in everything that you do? Because everything that you do, everything that you convey, every piece of writing is going to convey your brand. It's going to be organized out of that brand. Think about Nike. Everything they do is organized around that brand of performance. If it doesn't have to do with performance, they don't sell breakfast cereals. You know, everything they do is organized around that performance brand.
Mm-hmm.
And it works very well. Everything that FedEx does is organized around that brand. And everything that Oprah does, those three examples I gave,
mm-hmm.
the questions they ask at some level and the way they put together decisions that they make, a business plan, every aspect of what they do, it makes it easier to decide some things. As each of you get more and more successful, you're going to have all kinds of people who want you to do all sorts of things in terms of affiliations, presentations, you know, doing various things. And this is an easy way to decide, does this fit into my brand? And sometimes that's a really quick and easy yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that's helpful. If you have
yes, thank you.
About it or other questions, let's talk about it. So I want to just conclude then with some principles that are related to career that I've come to see and wanted to just summarize, because this is a summary in a way that has to do with successful and productive work in any career. And this is just a list of things. I think it's in your outline. Time is not an adequate measure of hard work. And remember the story about the people in the United States with the best work ethic. Hard work is not an adequate measure of performance or success. It has its own metric. A work ethic is not the same as a productivity or success ethic. If possible, delegate everything other than what you do uniquely well. Now, that's an aspiration, a goal. It's not something you can do in the beginning, but it's an organizer that you can increasingly look to, because if you do only what you do uniquely well, you'll work better, more enjoyably, make way more money, and have more time off. Time management is energy management. Stress regulation is energy management. Follow your passion. Know your optimum state of mind, your zone, to accomplish a specific task so that you can get in your flow. Know how to enter your optimum state of mind, how to get to your zone and your flow, and how to sustain that and protect it for the time you've designated and the task you've designated to match that particular state of mind during that time. When your passion and your expertise combine, deciding possibilities occur. Structure gives you freedom. And if you, this is just something I want to add because I did include it earlier. If you're working with someone who's thinking about changing careers or retiring, consider retirement as a new career. What is its mission and purpose? What's the business plan? The difference your wisdom, the person's wisdom will make in this career. Finally, consider this possibility. When you reach a point in your life that you can celebrate the freedom to work rather than freedom from work, that's success. Well, I know we're out of time. If there are questions that come up that you'd like us to begin with next time, just make a note of them or send them to me in an email, and we'll do that. I thought we'd have more time, but I got a little bit more expansive at certain points and didn't plan to. So we'll pick up right here next time. And thanks again, Kat, for your presentation and for all of your energy and input. Look forward to picking up with you next week right here. Thanks very, very much.
Hey, this was a great session.
Great.
Well,
have a great
thanks,
rest
Dave.
Of you. Yeah, absolutely. See you now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.